Hello, and welcome back or welcome to the Tread Lightly podcast. Whether you're a new listener or a returning listener, we're happy to be here with you today. I'm Laura of Laura Norris Running.
And I'm your co-host, Amanda Brooks of Run to the Finish. So as always, super excited to chat about this. I feel like there's so many questions when it comes to speed workouts. So hopefully today we can kind of demystify some of that and break it down a little bit.
Yes, I'm very excited to talk about this. And obviously, this is a very complicated topic, so we might miss some stuff today. So if we don't cover something that you are curious about, please reach out to us at Tread Lightly Running on Instagram, shoot us a question, and we'll address it in an upcoming episode.
Speaking of, we have a question today from Amy, who actually left this question on Spotify. Do I need a different type of running shoe on a treadmill versus the road?
Ooh, I feel like there's more to this question than initially appears because, you know, in some senses, a running shoe for the roads should work for the treadmill, but we're in a new era of running shoes. And while your daily trainer might work for a treadmill, there are some like carbon-plated shoes or some of those max cushion shoes with super high stack heights of 40 millimeters or more that might not feel as good on the treadmill as on the road due to the softer surface of the treadmill. What would you say to this listener?
100% from testing a lot of shoes, I noticed that some of the max stack height, max cushion kind of shoes changed my form on the treadmill. I ended up doing more heel striking because your form, I'm pretty good because I use the treadmill a lot, but for most people, they start crowding the front of the treadmill. They don't realize they're kind of changing their gait a little bit. And then you add a bunch of that extra cushion under the heel and they just tend to then be landing a little bit more on it. So I do tend to look towards the more moderate cushion for a lot of the treadmill workouts, and I find they just seem to work a lot better. Again, different people, different things, but that tends to be my recommendation too.
I even find that like I intuitively reach for my moderate cushion shoes on the treadmill, and I really encourage this listener to pay attention to how different shoes feel on the treadmill, but to also consider that the treadmill is softer than the roads and too much cushioning might feel not great or change their form. And then obviously trail shoes are not meant for the treadmill.
Yeah, definitely. We don't want to rub off those lugs.
Okay. So hopefully that was a helpful answer, Amy. You know, if you have any other questions, please reach out. And now we're going to deep dive into understanding all the running workouts. You probably hear terms such as tempo run, threshold run, VO2 max intervals, strides, hill sprints, hill repeats, progression runs, etc. And that's a lot of jargon. So we're going to dive into breaking down those different runs. But first, we're going to start talking more broadly about workouts. And one of the most common questions we receive is, when should you start adding workouts to your training?
This is an interesting one, I think, because for me, it tends to be a little later than I think it is for some coaches. I really want people to just have a consistent base of running without injury before throwing in a lot of speed work. Now, strides that we'll talk about, that's one of the early things, or hill repeats, early speed work that we're kind of lower risk of injury from those. But honestly, like even if you've been running like 6 months and really haven't done speed work, I'm fine with that because for me, you're building your muscles and all the things we've talked about, tendons, ligaments, and just that consistency before we've stressed your body in an additional way. What do you think?
I agree with that. We want to ensure that your musculoskeletal system is comfortable enough and adapted enough to handle easy running and handle, you know, a fair amount of easy running before we add in any higher intensity work. I also think that if athletes make sure they have a robust aerobic base, you know, running for 6, 9, even 12 months easy as a beginner before they start adding in workouts, they're just going to develop their aerobic fitness in a way that makes workouts feel better. And sometimes new runners get into this trap where they start hard workouts and they like strain on the hard workouts and they run them with poor form. And that creates a feedback cycle where they're always kind of running fast with poor form. as if you make sure that your biomechanical, neuromuscular, and aerobic systems can all tolerate easy running well, and then you're able to go into the hard workouts and run them smoothly with good form, that creates a much more positive feedback cycle for better form as workouts get more intensive.
I think one of the things there that you were kind of hinting at too is these different types of workouts. So especially when you're new, you may not be doing some of the things that we're getting ready to talk about because you're just not ready for them. So initially, you're probably starting with intervals where maybe you'll see this listed on your training plan as 10 by 1 minute at moderate effort or something like that. So what that's saying is we're going to do 10 repeats total. 1 minute, you're going to run at a moderate effort. And a lot of times when you're newer, we're shooting for an effort versus a pace because we're trying to teach you how your body feels because we don't know all your paces yet. And maybe that has a 1 minute recovery. So you'll run 1 minute at that hard effort, 1 minute easy, and repeat that for a total of 10 times, having done a warm up before that and then your cool down after, which is usually listed in the workout. But you may not early on be seeing things like a tempo run or VO2 max because not because your coach doesn't care, but because your coach is like, that's just not yet appropriate for where you are in training.
You need to be able to gauge different intensities. And also you just need to build your body into that. No elite runner started doing these monster workouts we see them doing from day one. They probably built there with fartleks, which we'll get into, hill things, strides, etc., and then built their workout abilities and pacing abilities over time. It's not this overnight thing of, oh, I'm going to go start doing double threshold repeats from day one.
Yeah. And I think hill repeats are one of the first workouts. You and I have said this in past podcasts that we both like to assign to people. So for a hill workout, you can find a hill that's anywhere from 4 to 12%. Like, what do you have access to, honestly? And the steeper it is, probably the shorter your repeat's going to be. But do maybe a 3 mile easy run. And then at the end of that, can you, for the first time around, start by doing like 5 by 20 seconds? So we're going to do 20 seconds running up that hill as hard as you can. And then you're going to take whatever time you need for recovery. You're going to walk down the hill. You're going to walk around, let yourself recover, and repeat that a total of 5 times. That helps you practice knee drive, muscle strength, and we're not so worried about you like straining something because you don't have the chance to try and overstride or something like that. So that's a really easy place to start if you're like, okay, I've got a base and I want to start getting faster. That's a good one to start with.
Unless you have like an active Achilles injury, there's so much less risk for getting injured doing hill repeats compared to trying to do intervals even on flat ground because of the way that hills kind of moderate the mechanical demands of a workout. Like, you're going to strengthen your muscles more, but you're not going to have quite that super high, super fast output that you would on flat that comes with a higher risk of injury.
And you mentioned fartlek workouts as another good one to start with. How do you describe those?
Yeah. So I know fartleks are ones that will have differing definitions, but kind of how they're most basically understood is it comes from the Swedish word for speed play. And they are these relatively unstructured compared to track workout types of intervals. And you can do them very relaxed, like you're running and you choose to pick up the pace from one light pole to another and then slow it down and recover for a bit until you feel ready. Or you can do them with some slight structure to them, such as pick up the pace for 1 minute and then you run easy for 2 to 4 minutes. And you can manipulate those variables, but usually they're time and effort based versus being 8 by 400 meters, so a distance at the track at X pace or X race effort.
I love fartleks, but I swear every time I assign them or put them in a plan, runners are so type A, everyone is like, no, I want you to just tell me how long to recover. Like, that's part of the point of this is like you learning to work with your body and like be like, okay, I am recovered. I could go forward with that effort again.
If I prescribe a recovery, it's usually something like 1 minute on, 4 minutes jog, because like chances are you're going to be recovered by those 4 minutes. And that longer recovery really controls the overall intensity of the session. So you recover more quickly than you would from, say, a track workout or VO2 max intervals.
That's a great way to describe it. I don't always even give them that. So I will start doing that to just give them an amount of time because they want it so badly. Okay, well, let's dive into some of these like big terms that we hear all the time. Which one do you want to start with?
Yeah, let's start with probably one of the most common yet vaguest ones out there, the tempo run. You've probably heard tempo runs a ton by reading different training plans, by seeing people's workouts on Strava, by, you know, following influencers on Instagram. And I notice a lot that people get really confused by the term tempo run because different coaches kind of use it differently. And it is kind of a broad term. At its most basic definition, we're talking about a prolonged effort at a moderate to maybe moderately hard intensity. A lot of times this will be marathon pace or half marathon pace, but sometimes I've seen tempo runs applied to even runs at your lactate threshold, which is like 10K to 15K pace. It's your 1 hour race pace. And I think that's where a lot of the confusion stems, is tempo versus threshold, since they can be used interchangeably. And tempo runs are usually like, you aren't doing intervals. Maybe you break it up into some longer intervals.
Yeah, see, that's interesting because I feel like I often do hear it described as like a tempo run is like what you could hold for an hour. Maybe not like a full out hour race, but a pace you could hold up to an hour. And so, yeah, I think if you have a plan where, you know, you actually have a specific coach, they're probably giving you details specifically about what they expect in that tempo run. If you're just using a paper plan off of the internet, I like this sort of description of thinking of it as like that, maybe like between marathon, half marathon pace, like you said. So something where if you're assigned to run for 20 minutes, you can hold it versus, you know what it feels like when you're doing intervals that are like, oh no, that was 3 minutes and I needed it to be over at 2 minutes and 45 seconds. So this should be an effort that like you're not gasping, but it's not your easy pace. So you are working, but you can still then easily recover from it after. It's not like a, ooh, I gotta walk, hands on my knees, like I went hard.
I always tell my athletes to make sure they could be able to do more. And these workouts are very common to use during race-specific training. So you might see them at other points in your training, but a lot of times we're using them as you're preparing for a marathon race or a half marathon race to get you used to the specific demands of the event, of running your race pace, of running that for a longer time. Obviously, there are different applications. And I think our episode earlier this season on the gray zone, zone three training, it was episode 2 of season 1, is really helpful for understanding the benefits of these runs. But yeah, they're useful. And the difference in the thing is like, I'm a Canova person. Like I read a lot of Canova early on, but Daniels does use the word tempo run, like how you were saying it. So that's, I think, where a lot of the confusion can stem.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that we have differing definitions for these words. So yeah, look at your plan, see what makes sense based on how the plan has been going, or if that coach has defined it somewhere. Usually there's like a key or a legend or something a lot of times, even to those free plans. So kind of check that out. The other term you mentioned, lactate threshold, I do think this is confusing because the two are kind of in the same wheelhouse, but are not the same thing. So lactate threshold is going to be a harder workout than a tempo run. So this is where we're definitely getting more towards that 1 hour race effort. So truly a race effort, not just like a, I could run this pace for an hour. It's kind of a workout, but like this is now we're starting to push. So it takes a little bit to figure out what that pace is if you haven't done maybe a 10K, 15K race anytime recently to kind of know and gauge that. But yeah, tell us a little more because there's a lot of like benefits to doing lactate threshold work.
Yeah, there are a lot of benefits. So, you know, these are kind of like a sweet spot for training for athletes because you're going to really improve your fitness, but your body's going to recover more quickly. There's going to be less fatigue, less cortisol released than interval runs. So when you do these threshold runs, which would be in zone four, if we're using the five zone model we've talked about, you get all this increase in your cardiac output, which essentially means more blood, more oxygen being sent to your muscles. Your body gets better at taking the lactate that's produced as a byproduct of glycolysis and shuttling it back into your muscles so that it can be turned into energy via gluconeogenesis, which is actually like a really cool thing. So it helps with building your fatigue resistance, essentially like extending how far you can run at a certain pace without getting tired. There's increased capillarization of fast twitch and slow twitch muscle fibers. You raise your lactate threshold. So essentially like you're making, let's say, your 10K or 15K pace faster. And as that gets faster, your half marathon and marathon paces are going to get faster with it too. And I think there's also this cognitive benefit of like learning to push moderately hard for slightly longer chunks of time just teaches you to kind of embrace how races can hurt compared to, say, super short 400 meter intervals that are done really quickly.
Yeah, so that's a good way to kind of think about these a little differently. So a lot of times intervals can be all variations, but like you said, a lot of times it is maybe something like 800s where we are going hard at your mile pace or 5K pace or something like that. A tempo is maybe going to start out at something like 20 minutes, but like you said, could build all the way up to being able to hold 10 miles at marathon pace. Lactate threshold is going to go back to intervals, but they're slightly longer. So instead of being like a 1 minute interval or something like that, they could be 3 to 15 minutes. But we're not going for, you know, 30 or 40 minutes at this effort level.
Even if you're doing it, say, 3 to 15 minute segments of this threshold run, you're probably only totaling 20 to 45 minutes of like total time at intensity. So that could be a workout like 3 by 10 minutes at threshold or 4 by 6 minutes at threshold, or, you know, maybe a big one of 2 by 15 minutes. But just because you could hold this effort for 1 hour when racing doesn't mean you want to hold it for 1 hour when training, because that's turning a training run into a race. And we don't want that for recovery reasons.
Yes, I was just going to say, like, if you think about the time you need off after a race, that would effectively be what you were doing in a workout. And so you would be changing the rest of your training plan. Okay, so next up, we have one that I admit this is not a term I use, but I feel like I've just started seeing it a lot more in a lot of training books and plans lately. But critical speed or critical velocity running, I think because I tend to just say 5K pace or 10K pace as the workout, but what we're technically talking about is a critical speed workout.
Yeah, and critical speed is a really popular term in exercise physiology, and these workouts have been popularized by Tom Schwartz, who, funny enough, he did his PhD at the same school I just finished my master's at, and his PhD was on this topic. So I think that's kind of funny. But it's this like 30 to 45 minute race effort. So depending on how fast you are, that might be roughly your 5K pace. It might be your 8K pace, or it might be your 10K pace. So when I give this to a lot of my runners, I'll say like 8K to 10K pace. It's somewhat hard, but it's not as hard as VO2 max intervals. And so you can do slightly longer intervals, like 3 to 8 minutes with 1 to 3 minute recoveries in, and you can total more time at intensity in these. So maybe it's 20 minutes of work instead of the 12 minutes of work you would do in a VO2 max workout, for example.
Yeah, these are interesting ones too, because they're really easy to overrun it, because like the first couple of reps might, it feels like I'm running fast, but maybe it doesn't feel that hard. And then as you keep going, trying to maintain that pace on each subsequent rep is getting harder if you started out especially too fast. So it's one where it is really important to rein yourself in and figure out what pace, what effort level you're supposed to be going for, and not let yourself overdo it.
Exactly. I usually reserve these workouts for athletes who have just a little bit of experience under their belt, maybe a few years of running or racing, because if you did say, you know, 5 by 5 minutes at critical speed with a 2 minute recovery jog and you kept your pace controlled, that's a very effective workout. You're going to get faster, but you're not going to beat yourself too up. If you race that, or if you push that to even VO2 max and you're trying to do 5 by 5 minutes at your VO2 max, you're going to toast yourself into a crisp. Your injury rate could go up. And especially if you do that continually, you're going to kind of start to get slower actually because your body's being worked too hard.
Yeah. One of the things I like about a lot of these is that I think as distance runners, it's easy to fall into like, oh, tempo runs are basically what I need. I need to practice marathon pace type runs and just extend that out. But you do actually get benefits from doing these shorter, faster, different varieties of workouts as well, even if your goal is the marathon.
Oh yeah, I love critical speed in marathon training because it has those benefits you said, but people recover a little faster than if we're doing VO2 max. And that's not to say VO2 max workouts are bad. It's just they have, like, since you're in zone 5 for those, they have just such a high recovery demand on your body.
So speaking of VO2 max, I feel like I did make this mistake here recently. I've been doing a lot of stuff at mile effort, and I kind of realized I was doing it too many weeks back to back because I was a little bit shortened in my long runs as I was figuring out an injury. So I was just going extra hard, I think, on the speed work. And yes, like you said, I started to realize I was like, oh, there's a reason that the day after my recovery run is starting to feel so bad. It's because I've done too many at this level of intensity in back-to-back weeks where, like, it would have been better to have had a little bit more of that variety during that time.
Yeah, I think there's like two really good ways to think about VO2 max intervals. And if you're an experienced runner with enough of a base, you could use them in a very short speed phase before you start marathon or half marathon training. Or if you're doing like a 5K or 10K, it can be really helpful to think about these as like the spark to light the fire for race day. You don't want to do them tons because they're more fatiguing, but when you do them, the adaptation from it can be significant. But to kind of like clarify exactly what these are, so VO2 max is your top end aerobic capacity. These are really hard efforts. They're usually at about your 15-minute race effort. So for a lot of us recreational runners, that's like your 3K race effort. For some people, it might even get close to like their mile race effort. They're very hard. You are going to feel like your lungs are burning and your legs are burning and you're tasting pennies by the end of one of these workouts. Usually, since it takes a minute or two for like your oxygen uptake to reach your VO2 max, these intervals are 2 to 4 minutes in duration. And because they're so hard, you have about 50% to 100% recovery time. So just like an example of that, you could do 3-minute repeats with a 3-minute recovery jog after them. And kind of opposite of the critical speed, with critical speed, if you feel like the recovery jog is too short, you're going too hard with VO2 max. If you feel like the recovery time prescribed is too long, you probably could go a little bit harder in them. Like, these are not easy workouts.
That's a really good way to kind of judge the effort on it. I really like that. One of the things I like about this is that it improves our mitochondrial respiration and our fast twitch muscle fibers. And I feel like mitochondria is kind of the buzzword lately. So this is going to get people all excited. But like we have already said, this is not a all the time workout. This is a sometimes workout, no matter what it's improving. We still want to make sure we're doing those different varieties and not just going super hard all the time.
These are very fatiguing. So usually if you do them, you want at least one recovery day afterwards, whether it's a recovery run or rest. And it might need to be, if you're doing these are your only hard workout of that week.
So the next one that would be similar but different is sprinting. And honestly, probably most of us don't do enough sprinting. There is actually some really good evidence that it's really beneficial. I just think there are only so many hours and so many miles in a given week to do all the things. But A sprint, a true sprint, is a pace that honestly, after 20 seconds, you could not possibly hold it to keep going any further. So this is basically running at that level 10 on the RPE kind of scale. And it's hard for most of us to actually get to that level of intensity because we're not used to pushing to that level of intensity.
We're really not. Like in grad school, I had to do like form analysis on myself of sprinting form for my strength and conditioning class. And it was hard enough to actually sprint to get raw video footage to put through the software to analyze. You're entirely using fast twitch muscle fibers here, which for most of us long distance runners, we've trained ourselves to have more slow twitch muscle fibers and to recruit more of those. Sprints are hard. Yeah, for sure.
They are so hard. And I know sometimes people like think they're sprinting and I'm like, I still don't think you're actually sprinting because it's a mental switch to like truly push yourself to that intense level. It takes a lot.
This is where I think hill sprints can be helpful because the hill naturally will make things so much harder where you might get up to that really hard intensity. And also since you have to have good form on hills, you're probably less likely to pop a hamstring while doing it.
Oh, yes, so true. So the downgraded version of that that you may often see on training plans is strides. And they do get confused sometimes, I think, with sprinting because it's a fast run, but they are different. So the way I kind of like to describe strides is if you visualize like a little bit of an arc, so there's a little bit of a ramp up, I'm going fast and I'm slowing down, and you think about that as one side of a track, you want to stay completely relaxed. So no tensing your face, no like gripping your hands and creating a fist, like you're staying relaxed and getting yourself through that arc running fast. So it's going to be faster than what you've probably done on an interval, but it's super relaxed. They are a process to sort of figure out and like get your body to understand what you're trying to do.
They're very, very beneficial. There was this 2018 study in Physiological Reports that kind of applied strides to runners. They did 30-second strides, which will have more cardiac stress than 20-second ones that are more neuromuscular. But what was really interesting was that these runners improved 10K performance, which is still like the type of performance where you're using a lot of slower twitch muscle fibers or those intermediary muscle fibers. And like they tested it in both regular and glycogen depletion states, and they also improved in the glycogen depleted state, which solidifies that it was the slow twitch muscle fibers that were responsible for those changes. So it's really cool to think that something that's getting you to run faster, it's improving your running economy, but it's also improving your body in a way that's going to trickle down to those slow twitch muscle fiber dependent distances like marathons or even ultra marathons.
I like what you mentioned there about time. I lean more towards having people do the 20 second because the goal is not to turn this into an interval workout. It should not be a workout. This is at the end of your run, you're doing this 20 seconds and then whatever, walk around, jog around, like, but it is different than intervals because the goal is not that, like you said, cardio aerobic, like getting everything like fired up. This is just like a real quick thing that I have done to teach my legs what it feels like to have a faster turnover and what that pace, like I can get there kind of thing. It's just this sort of, to me, it reminds me of just doing form drills. So form drills are about teaching your brain, this is how I want you to move while I'm running, not you thinking about it while you're running. So strides are the same thing. You're sort of teaching your body that, hey, you've got that faster turnover in there. And so it's there and just kind of working on things.
And even like since strides, when done properly, are such low stress, some more advanced athletes may use them as part of their warm-up before a race. I know you've talked about that before on here, before doing an interval or speed workout, like 2 to 3 sets of strides to kind of prime into the harder demands of the session. I love strides. They are so wonderful. We should all do them more.
They are great. One of the other questions that I do often get is, if you see on a training plan, say 3 by 1 miles at marathon pace, are we talking about goal pace versus your current marathon pace? I tend to differentiate that specifically on my plans. So I will put like a G in front of it. So GMP, goal marathon pace. Sometimes early in the training, you may be doing those workouts at your existing marathon pace and then building into goal marathon pace over the course of training. But how do you kind of answer that?
We're building from current fitness. So we're like building up from current fitness versus building backwards from goal fitness. So usually we, like you said, we start where your current marathon pace is, but sometimes you get a runner who's just very eager and ambitious and their goal marathon pace is something that's going to take a few cycles to work towards. So we don't even touch it in that training cycle. Cause say it's someone who is a 4:15 marathoner and they want to be a sub-4 marathoner, a sub-4 marathon pace might actually be closer to their threshold pace right now. So that's kind of why I keep that more focused on like what realistically feels like marathon effort or a moderate effort for you right now at this phase of training so that we don't burn you out by race day.
If you're not sure what your paces are for a lot of different things, maybe you haven't raced a ton, there are a number of calculators, some like the Jack Daniels and some others that are out there. So you can kind of plug in an existing race or something that you've done, and it will sort of tell you this might be about the pace you should be hitting for 10K, for 5K, to help you as you're kind of thinking about these different workouts or as you see them on your plan to kind of gauge maybe what pace would be good for you.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll add to that, workout pacing is a skill. We kind of hinted at that at the beginning of the episode when you were talking about starting out beginners, but you know, even for some advanced athletes, it might be early season, you feel a little rusty and you have to remind yourself of how these feel. It's okay if you have one workout where you kind of miss the mark and you have to recalibrate. What matters is recalibrating from that workout and learning that and applying forward rather than just being like, well, I ran this one tempo run too fast, so I'm going to run them all this fast.
And I think important to say too, like I'm someone who historically really did not like these hard speed workouts for many, many, many years. I set a lot of PRs without doing them, but I probably would have done even better with them. So really in the last few years, as I started focusing on the 10K, I've done more variety of these and been able to lean into it and been excited about the hard. And I think for distance runners, that is a little bit of a mental switch because a lot of times we'll say things to ourselves like, I run far, not fast. And so we've sort of told ourselves that like, these are just too hard. I don't really like them. But you are someone who likes hard if you are doing marathons. So it's just getting yourself to, on speed work days, I think, lean into a different kind of hard and embrace that.
These workouts build fitness. So even if you want to only run marathons, don't you want to get faster at those marathons? I do. I want to get faster at the marathon. And so I think it's really good to think about like getting faster overall because you do all these workouts and they raise your ceiling and they raise, I don't know, the attic underneath your ceiling and all that stuff. As if you just do only your race pace, you're kind of limited by a lower ceiling eventually. So really embrace a variety of workouts, even if you have a certain distance that you prefer to race.
And don't think age is an excuse. You actually need some of these short, hard workouts specifically because you are aging. So I feel like that's another excuse we'll throw around. So appropriately like planned, but they are still useful and still beneficial.
Oh, I love it. Is there anything that you would leave our listeners as we wrap up this discussion on workouts?
Yeah, I think that was the big thing, kind of thinking about that mindset and not being afraid to just try some different workouts and some different things. Like, who cares? There's no one judging whether it was good or bad other than the decision you're making mentally about it. So don't be afraid to just try.
That's such good advice. This is less important than that. Obviously, that I think was a key takeaway. The other one I'd say is use technology as an aid, but not a hindrance. So Garmin's can be really awesome because you can, and Coros and all this, because you can program it to beep at you for your intervals so you're not staring at your watch. And that's super, super helpful. Use that as a tool so you can get into a flow state. At the same time, if you look down in a workout and your effort seems right and your watch tells you a pace that you didn't expect, don't judge yourself by it. Just check your effort. I think we kind of talked a lot about how these workouts should feel. And just know that, you know, there will be day-to-day variation in how you perform. And it's not pace that determines the outcome of a workout. It's time at the specified intensity.
I am super excited to hear from all of you after this episode. Let us know if there are other things you have questions about, other speed workouts, whatever it might be. Like we said, you can find us on Instagram at @treadlightly. We are always watching for your questions, whether it ends up being a full episode or something we answer at the beginning of another show.
And please rate, review, and subscribe on whichever podcast platform you prefer to listen to us. And thank you for listening.